we're waxing philosophical today with Scott Lechtrecker.
Wax my poetic.
Wax your poetic.
Ah, Scott, we have what?
Wax this.
Oh God, I'm so not looking forward to this. Actually,
so not looking forward to it. I traveled in a freaking nor'easter to get here. For the podcast was what I was told.
Yes.
So for everyone, Scott is a bit of a foodie. Not a bit of a foodie. He is a foodie.
He's a food. You've referred to him as a food snob.
David, just start rolling because there's gonna be a lot of B-roll here that's gonna be good.
We are rolling.
All right, so we have a studio guest. He is a repeat offender.
Here we go.
Talking to the mic, fool.
Gotcha.
He traveled in a April nor'easter to tell us his story, right? He is from Queens, New York. Well, not from Queens, but that's where he lives. He's from Strong Island. He is Mr. Scott Lechtrecker. Say hello.
Hello.
Hello again. Hello.
God.
I just called to say hello. And I probably got those lyrics wrong. So yeah. Scott has been listening to episodes and grading my lyrics, and most of them have been failure. And recently as yesterday, I had a conference call, and he heard me drop a lyric on a...
That was truly embarrassing. I felt embarrassed.
You were embarrassed for me?
He was embarrassed for you.
Fantastic. Okay. Hang on. We got Studio Dave coming in.
It's okay.
Are we not hearing?
I'll continue.
Okay. Yeah.
Put your hat backwards.
Just a drop of water
in an endless sea. I close my eyes.
What is a drop of water in an endless sea?
Only for a moment, and a moment's gone.
Look at all the lonely people.
All right.
I have a story with that, but that's
what? Eleanor Rigby?
Yes. Okay. I'll tell you guys later.
Did you know her?
I slept with her.
Okay. All right. My God, the three-peat.
Like everybody likes that girl, Eleanor Rigby.
Yeah.
Wait, did you sleep with her too?
I have not slept with Eleanor Rigby. all right. So Scott is back, right? And he's back to talk about more stuff. So Scott, let me ask you, before we tell the people what we're going to get into, in your life, was it the addiction, right? Or is it this next story we're going to tell that bothers you more, less, is you're more sensitive about, you have a more difficult time talking about? Which is it? Is it this next story or the story of addiction?
Definitely obesity, for sure.
Oh, that's what we're talking about?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes. Surprise, I let it out of the bag.
Surprise! Hello again! Hello! Christina's looking at me like I have three heads. That's my Neil Diamond. Neil Diamond saying that, right?
Yes.
Okay. So, Scotty Moosh, Scotty, big Satanadi, struggled with obesity, right? Now, does that run in the family? Like, is it genetic, obesity?
Absolutely, of course, yeah. And, you know, I remember my grandmother was always telling me, you know, you got to be careful with your weight. Look at the Nardies, which is, you know,
overweight?
There's a lot of fat Nardies.
Now, dude, what's the definition of morbidly obese? 100 pounds overweight?
It has to do with your BMI.
Were you morbidly obese?
Yes.
Oh.
Yes. Morbid obesity, BMI starts at 40. So between, you know, BMI is basically just a calculation that uses your weight and your height. And overweight people have a BMI of 25 to 30. Then you start obesity. Stage 1, 30 to 35. Stage 2, 35 to 40. Morbidly obese, 40 to 45. And there's also super obese.
You weren't super obese, although I've seen pictures.
Okay, I sort of feel like morbidly should be worse than super. Don't you think? But morbidly just sounds worse.
It doesn't. It's not like how we use morbid. It's more. It just means you're diseased. That's it. To doctors.
But isn't obesity in and of itself at whatever level considered a disease?
It doesn't
like
necessarily
like I've been obese my whole life. Like
no, it doesn't. It's not necessarily. You can be obese and fit.
Me. I'm 220 pounds and I run, right? I'm
not sure if you're obese though.
You're
definitely overweight. You're overweight.
Thanks. I'm slim thick. Are we boring you? Christina's yawning.
Sorry.
Christina's yawning.
It's been
Dude,
a long week.
I hope the microphone caught that. Christine is yawning.
I am
slim thick, meaning I got some chub, but I also work out, right? I like to eat, so I run and I do stuff. It helps me, like, counterbalance. So, Scott, listen, when I met you in college, you weren't obese at all. You were skinnier than you are now.
No, you know something? I think about my weight going up and down over the years. I do recall whatever grade you're in when you're getting, like, scoliosis tests. Do you remember
yes,
doing that?
Yes, and I was, they still do it. They still do it today.
Right? Yeah, and yeah. I remember, you know, taking one and like all these kids behind me, they're like, look at Scott. He's got like a beer belly.
I mean, dude, don't all 14-year-olds have beer bellies? Yeah.
I don't know. But I liked it. I was like, yeah, man, that's cool. I got a beer belly.
You also had hair under your armpits at the time, too.
Maybe.
You know,
I don't know.
You, whatever, you know. All right.
But I do remember, do you remember me having Slim Fast in that fridge?
Yes. I remember mixing Slim Fast with beer. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Slim Fast.
Mark,
with
I think
beer?
Mark wanted to make Slim Fast sandwiches. He would like eat.
How do you make Slim Fast sandwiches?
Dude, two pieces of bread with some Slim Fast, and you eat it. Maybe a little mustard or mayo.
Yeah.
Or
but
soya
Slim
sauce.
Fast is
a powder.
Liquid.
No, it's a powder.
You just
powder.
Got the powder.
It was a powder. Yeah. Right. Yeah. It was a powder.
Or some soya sauce on it. Dude, I used to make literally mustard sandwiches.
Dude, hot sauce sandwiches were that was really really good. Just hot sauce. Yeah, hot sauce and bread. That's it.
So Slim Fast served as your protein between the bread? Your
yes.
powdered protein?
Well, for Mark, yeah. Yes. I did not do that.
All right. So I just had a very...
I remember being pretty slim in my mid-20s. I remember being like 160 pounds maybe in my mid-20s. But at least 10 years later, I was pretty heavy and... Then, you know, I did have my thyroid.
Wait, hold. So Scott and I had a period of distance, meaning we didn't, like, see or talk to each other.
We were estranged.
Yeah. For how long? At least a decade.
At least, yeah.
Probably closer to 12
years,
or 15.
Yeah, something like that.
And I remember seeing a picture of Scott. I was like, Jesus, he looked like he fucking ate himself. Like you look like you cloned yourself. You were like... Double, if not two and a half, three times the size of what I remembered you. And I was like, dude, he's all head. Like, his head was ginormous. And I was like, oh, looks like things are going great with him. Like, asshole, whatever. You know. But now, you know, we're reunited, have been for a while. But, like, that's when I remember seeing the change in you, right? So, dude, was it depression that led to eating and lack of exercise? So what got you to...
I guess it's, you know, yeah, a little bit. It's you know, the effects of life. And, you know, and the job. I always ate, right? I always worked at a restaurant. I worked at Manja. Manja was great.
Yeah, great food.
Really good place to eat.
You didn't exercise, though, either.
No, you know, I had a job. I sat at a desk. You know, I had a sedentary lifestyle.
So back in the day, you didn't walk as much as you do today?
No.
Scott does like 10,000 steps a day.
At least.
Before noon.
Yeah, before noon.
Yeah, he does 10,000 steps.
I mean, you walk everywhere, right?
Yeah. Well, in New York, you know, people walk a lot. You know, I think it's a very active city. You know, you have to walk.
All right, wait, hang on. Dude, so You talk about sedentary lifestyle. You talk about working in a restaurant. You talk about eating. I think there's more to it than
that. There's definitely more to it.
Because, dude, I'm gonna say this as nicely as I know.
Oh, God.
You kind of ballooned up, right? But that's genetics. That's just not – that's either stuffing your face in the middle of the night and then going to sleep, right, because that's the worst time to eat, or it's something hormonal in your body, which maybe has to do with the thyroid issue, right?
Yeah, it's a lot. It's all different things combined. There's a big risk for alcoholism after having bariatric surgery. Like, that increases.
Really?
Yes.
Wait.
Yeah.
So we talked. That's interesting. So did that happen?
Absolutely. Yeah.
So when you were drinking before your bariatric surgery, was it as much as you did when you quit?
Of course
you know
not.
What I mean?
No, okay. No, of course. Well, not.
And why?
I wasn't an alcoholic.
But why are those things? Why is bariatric surgery and alcoholism connected?
Well, it does affect the way that you
process alcohol.
Yes, and also it's just it's basically addiction transfer. You're transferring addictions, but you do process alcohol quicker. It hits you harder.
Wait. What do you mean you transfer addiction? So were you addicted to food? Is that it?
Most.
I don't know.
Well, everybody is addicted to food. You have to eat food, but some people have an unhealthy relationship with food, and they eat things. Listen, obesity is a very slow way to commit suicide. I mean, it leads to all kinds of health problems.
So is smoking.
Yeah, but smoking it's not like a guarantee. You know, I think 20% of smokers get lung cancer or something like that. It's not, you know, if you go into old age, that's one of the things is that I was heading into, you know, middle age and I had, you know, an extra 100 pounds on me.
That's
so
hard.
And you're at an increased level of heart attack, stroke, cancer. All these things come into play when you're, more seriously, when you're that overweight.
So your relationship with food.
Yes.
So, Scotty, your relationship with food, I've noticed a difference. After your surgery, you get full faster, right?
Yes.
But, dude, what's the percentage?
Pizza, that's the thing is like before surgery, pizza would be a snack. You know, And now pizza is a meal. And it's usually, for me, I get one slice of pizza. Sometimes I'll have two. But, you know, like one slice is sufficient. While before I would eat, I could eat a pie, I guess. Slowly but surely, I could eat my own pizza.
I could see you lying on your couch. Hang on. I have the vision. TV is in the background. Lying on a couch, there's a coffee table between you and the TV, and the pizza's there. And you're lying, watching TV with your right hand, grabbing the slice, and kind of like the Seinfeld episode when he's eating grapes. And the pizza, it's just you're like, you know, looming with the pizza over your face, and you're just like, and then you're taking a crust and you're throwing it back in the box.
Ironically, right? Well, it's not really ironically, this whole thing, this bariatric journey of mine started with pizza. And it's sort of a funny story because my wife grew a liking to Pizzeria Uno.
Ooh.
Yeah, do you like Pizzeria Uno? Do you know what it is?
Yeah, but not if you're a New Yorker. She's not a New Yorker. I mean,
yeah, but anyway, we were getting Pizzeria Uno, you know, fairly, you know, often.
And
or
it's like a greasy crust.
Yeah, yeah. It's really, really, really high in fat. It's really bad for you. But anyway, you know, they would deliver to our house. And it was buy one, get one free. So
of course it was.
Yeah. So, of course, we got two. She gets a vegetarian. I get, you know, something with meat
supreme.
Probably. Yeah, whatever.
Meat supreme.
Something like that.
Yeah.
And I just ate the hell out of that pizza. So I wake up in the middle of the night. I'm thinking I'm having a heart attack. I'm in so much pain. Like, you know, just radiating from the center of my chest and my back. I'm like, this is horrible. Mm. And, you know, I get up, I start, you know, walking around. I realize I'm probably not having a heart attack. And, you know, I Google what could be going on with me. And I surmised that I was having a gallbladder attack. I blew out my gallbladder.
Really?
Eating
pizza.
Well, I mean, obviously I had some form of gallbladder disease before that. It doesn't just start like that. But I had my first gallbladder attack. So the gallbladder, just a quick...
science lesson?
Yeah, quick
anatomy
science lesson. Is, you know, your liver makes bile. Bile is used to help your body digest fat. So if you have a big fatty meal like I just had, and literally like one slice of pizza Uno is like your daily fat intake. And I must have had, you know, 7 or 8 slices or something like that.
Attaboy.
Yeah.
Attaboy.
Yeah. So you know, the liver makes bile. The gallbladder is your bile reservoir. Your body knows, hey, there's a lot of fat in the system, you know, and your brain tells your gallbladder, squeeze.
Mm-hmm.
But if you have gallstones, and a lot of people do have gallstones, I have my stone was too big and in the wrong place, and it will block mm-hmm. the duct. So your gallbladder will squeeze, and nothing is coming out. And it basically gets swollen. It's so painful, and it lasts for like, as long as that fat is like in your gut. So it could be like 6 hours of excruciating pain.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Okay,
really
so
bad.
Did you get taken to the hospital or?
No, I didn't. I had a few gallbladder attacks. I finally went to the hospital while I was having one. And basically the only thing they do is they'll, you know, they'll do a sonogram, make sure, you know, everything looks okay or whatever.
And they'll give you morphine.
Just to
deal with it.
Yeah.
And it doesn't even really cut into it. It just dulls it just a little bit.
Okay.
So I did that a few times. And the last time I went, and I didn't even get to see a doctor before the pain went away. And the doctor came in and I'm like, listen, I think I'm leaving because I feel okay. It's a gallbladder attack and it's over. And he was like, gallbladder attack? How do you know that? I'm like, well, I've been here, you know, a few times in the last couple of years with the same thing. And he's like, and you still have your gallbladder because...
Oh.
That's what he said.
Really?
So the solution is to get your gallbladder taken out.
Right.
But if you get your gallbladder taken out, then you can't eat any fatty foods.
No. Liver, basically, the bile will go, instead of going into that bladder, it goes from your liver into your GI tract.
Like, isn't the gallbladder one of the, this is going to sound ridiculous, more useless
yes,
organs
it's something
in
you
the body?
Can, it's something you can live without.
Okay,
yes.
Got it.
Kind
right.
of like your appendix.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. So the doctor's like, and you still have your gallbladder because of why? And then where does it go from there?
I decide that I am going to get it taken care of. I'm going to have it removed. So I go into the surgeon's office. You know, I find a surgeon. I go into his office. And, you know, this bariatric surgery was not even anywhere on my radar at all. And, before I went into surgery, you know, someone told me, you know, come in with some questions, which is always a good move if you're going to...
Did you go in with Jimena for the consultation?
No, okay. No. So one of the things I did was I'm watching videos of gallbladder surgery, and I see, you know, it's laparoscopic. They, you know, go in through your belly button, pump up your stomach full of, you know, air. Different tools are there, you know, lights, scalpels, and one of them is a laser that they kind of... burn away, you know, fat or whatever it is to get to the gallbladder. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, the guy's like, do you have any questions for me? And I said, yeah, is my big fat stomach going to be a problem for you? And he said, for me, no. He goes, but after this, for you, you know, you're going to have, that's your next major health concern. And I said, oh, okay. And he said, you know, we do this bariatric surgery. Have you ever considered it? And...
Sorry,
are
I
you
coughed,
okay?
And
oh.
he's like,
dude,
he gets mad
at me.
She's
been coughing into the microphone for like 3 hours straight.
Okay. I thought it was
right.
something I said. So
all
anyway,
right.
no,
anyway,
not
that's,
anything you said.
I had no idea that, you know, I thought it was like a cosmetic surgery. I didn't know. And he's like, no, it's, you know, your insurance will pay for it. I'm like, really? And, you know, the next day I met another surgeon in his office. You know, he said he didn't do it, but.
Literally the next day?
He said that they can do both at the same time. That was kind of like the plan. He was like, you know, as long as we're in there, we can also do this. Yeah. And, you know, you can save yourself a surgery. I didn't end up doing that because.
Oh, so you ended up doing them separately?
Yes.
Why?
Because I wanted to. I was going away to Hawaii. I wanted to make sure I did not have a gallbladder attack in Hawaii.
Wait,
and it takes.
Was that the trip with your dad?
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember you going to Hawaii.
No, but this is probably the first time.
Okay.
This is probably a few years before that. So anyway, it takes about 4 to 6 months for insurance to sign off on the surgery. There's certain things you have to do. You have to
see a psychiatrist and stuff, right?
A psychologist, yeah. Nutritionist. You have to do certain weigh-ins. You know, it's a whole process. And, you know, the place they have someone that does it for you, you know, they have like a office worker that's all she does is like, you know, arrange these insurance things. So anyway, you know, I had the gallbladder surgery, and one of the things, it was super easy. It was just like...
Where's your gallbladder in your body? Where is
it? It's under your liver.
Okay.
It's under your liver.
Where's my liver? I don't know. Okay.
Liver's like here.
Okay.
Right. I don't know either.
Sorry. I know the geography of my body the way I know the geography of the United States. Not at all.
And the lyrics to songs.
Thank you.
He's got to get back at you somehow. Okay.
It's okay.
So is this your 0 hour?
Yes, because I asked that question, and because, you know, this doctor said to me, he goes, I got your blood pressure, it's high, your blood sugar is probably high, I can hear the way that you're breathing when you get on the table, you probably have apnea, like obstructive.
Did you have apnea?
Yeah. And
so there's all these comorbidities. Right.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. So he was like, if you you could not get the surgery and, you know, risk all these different things. You may be, you know, on a heart attack.
But hang on. What if the doctor said, so I think there's two types of doctors, potentially. Some doctors that say get the surgery and get it done. And then others that say improve your lifestyle. Right. What if the doctor said, hey, improve surgery's the last thing I want to do is risk. There's always a risk of death. Improve your lifestyle. Eat less, exercise more, go see a nutritionist. If he had said that, where would we be today? Would you have had the surgery? Like, would you have needed the surgery?
I mean, would I have had it? I don't think I would have had it. I don't think I would have had it. And I think I'd still be, if I was still alive, mm-hmm. I'd still be, you know, pretty
chunky.
Yeah. I had lost weight before. It wasn't like, you know, I was always up and down. I remember one time I lost... You know, I was probably 240, and I think I went down to almost 200.
Okay, that's a big loss.
Yeah, and that was, you know, really hard. Obviously, it's really hard to lose weight, and with the help of a trainer, Humana had gotten me sessions with a trainer, and I just basically followed his diet, and, you know, went to see him a couple times a week and exercised every day. You know, listen, you know, here's one thing that worth mentioning is that I somebody told me check out the Biggest Loser study.
Okay.
Remember that show?
Sure.
The Biggest Loser?
Yes.
So almost all of them
gain it back.
Yes. And it's like once you're that overweight for that long a time, it's kind of like your body thinks that's normal.
Yes.
Yes.
It becomes accustomed to the new normal.
So even if you lose all this weight, your body will want to put it back on. I mean, you know, your brain always is telling you eat. It doesn't care. It wants calories. It wants energy.
I want a fondue right now. I want a Swiss cheese fondue right now.
Emmentaler.
No, Emmentaler's too greasy. Gruyere, raclette, and...
Raclette, yes, that's the one. That's the one. Okay, anyway.
Okay, let's get away from cheese and bread right now. Both of which are my greatest foes.
All right, so it's funny. Scott, bread is your greatest foe.
Bread is my greatest.
Scott and I were talking. I don't know if you were part of this. Probably Thursday night we were talking about what would be, if you were in death row, what would be your last meal?
Mm-hmm.
What was your answer, Scott? If you were in death row.
Bread and butter.
Bread and butter,
yes.
Would be his last meal.
What would yours be?
I don't know yet. I haven't, I don't know. I like a lot of different things. Meatballs? I don't know. Shrimp, lobster, you know. I don't eat a lot of red meat, so.
I would have a poutine.
Ugh. Really?
Yes.
I know what that is.
French fries, gravy, cheese curds. Mm.
What's a cheese curd?
Yeah, what is
it? Oh, no. We have to go to Quebec, and we have to have it as they eat it in Montreal. It is delicious.
I forget that you're Canadian sometimes.
Ugh.
All right,
so. Do you forget that I'm Asian, too?
No, that's obvious. So, Scott, you get signed up for your bariatric surgery, right? I saw it before and after. You sent a before and after of me that I had never seen. It's remarkable. It is, dude, you're almost unrecognizable in your former self.
I get people that, you know, when I go to the airport and I give over my license or something like that, they're kind of like, is this
who
the same? Is this,
really?
Yeah, yeah.
So what's the process of the surgery? What's it like?
And what's recovery like?
Oh.
And, like, is bariatric surgery the one in which you can't have, like, soda afterwards and
yes.
you're not supposed to drink beer?
Yes, yes, because those things fill you up. And it, you know, the surgery, it's funny. I had robotic surgery. It was a doctor.
Yeah. Domi Origato, yeah. Mr. Okay, go.
Yeah.
All right, you had robotic surgery.
I had robotic surgery. You know, it takes a few hours. You're in the hospital like 3 days. I think I was 3 nights. And you know, basically after that, you know, you're on a really
Very restrictive, right? You can barely eat.
You can barely eat.
What's
yes.
the size
are
of your stomach after? It's like a shot glass.
It's
right?
like an egg. It's basically.
But how do you get enough nutrition? How do you not have
your body? Your body has enough nutrition,
exactly.
right?
That's...
Like your body doesn't need more than like a little like fist's worth of food.
Mine does.
No, but it's because you think your brain thinks your body does, but your body doesn't actually need that.
You can figure out how many calories you would need. Like, what's your basal metabolic rate?
Yeah.
Your brain needs 400 calories a day.
Okay.
You know, your brain is by far like the hungriest of your organs. But, you know, most people go around 2,000 calories a day. I was down to probably under 500, 300, 400, 500 a day.
And you probably lost weight very, very quickly, right?
Oh,
within the
yes.
first,
you lose
like,
weight and you
months,
lose muscle. It's very important. Like, you know, I didn't eat solid food for maybe 5 days. And then you could really only drink liquids. I think the first thing I had was like hummus. You know, the first.
How many days were you just doing liquids then? A couple of weeks?
Almost, yeah.
Wow.
It goes in stages. You know, it depends on, you know, the texture of the food. Like the last thing you could do is like chicken breast. I still have a problem with chicken breast.
Why? Because it's too filling?
No, it's just too dry.
Okay.
You'll block your stomach.
Okay. And
you know, you'll feel like you're full, like shit is coming up your esophagus
yeah.
and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I threw up so many times post surgery. I would make myself throw up.
Because you were too full?
Because you were too full.
Yes. Yes.
And it would feel uncomfortable.
Yes. Yes.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, I threw up a lot.
How long did it take you to get to the weight you wanted to be at? Post surgery, like
six,
for you
seven,
to be like,
months, something
I look
like that.
Hot,
it was,
man.
It depends on how you know. I was pushing it too. I was like, you know, keep it going. I was very happy, and you know, I loved becoming thin again.
Yeah,
and you know, I think it was about 8 months for me. But you know, you can lose like a pound a day.
That's a lot of pounds.
Yes, yes, yes. Definitely in the first month. I definitely lost 30 pounds in that first month.
So what was the total weight loss?
About 100 pounds.
You lost
of which I've probably put on at least 20,
which is normal. Yeah,
yeah, which is
that's normal.
Yeah.
Like there's the extreme weight loss, and then your body starts to acclimate, right?
Yeah. Anybody that gets it now, I'll say, wait before you buy your clothes. You know, don't buy them at your thinnest because you probably won't fit into them in a year or two like that.
Yeah, it's funny. I have a suit that I can't wear. Like when I came back from North Carolina, when I was at my thinnest, I'm like, I need to buy a suit. I'm like, I haven't worn those pants in fucking 6 years. You know,
nothing worse than tight pants.
Ugh. So. Scott, so how long has it been since you had your surgery?
8 years, maybe.
And have you beaten the odds, air quotes, on weight gain, like above the norm?
It's never too late. Never too late to get fat again. But yeah, there's definitely people that, you know, if you don't change your eating habits, you'll. Yeah, but I have changed my eating habits. There are certain foods that make me sick.
Like what?
That I use. Like
we're trying to get you for dinner tonight.
No, you know I. When you,
I'm buying chicken.
You can, buy. Yeah, thanks. Get some chicken breast. sugar, things with too much sugar, things with too much carbs.
Fried foods.
Not so much fried foods, but sugar is a real problem because
it
hits. Well, it hits your GI tract later. than it normally would. So it enters your blood much quicker. And, you know, I'm just sensitive to really sugary things. I can eat sugary things, but I won't eat them in the morning. I won't eat them first thing. I'll make sure there's something in my stomach before.
Yeah, we talked about that when Christina and I were eating,
Banana bread. Banana bread. Yeah. Thank you, Bevy.
Yeah.
And Scott's like, no, but he's like, no, I can't do that first thing in the morning. Yeah. That's by choice.
It's by choice, and it's also
by necessity too, right?
Like, I just don't eat that way anymore. You know, I haven't had like pancakes. I don't eat that anymore, or you know, those kind
I'm
of
so
sugary
sorry.
Things. Yeah, I haven't had a yodel. That's one thing. I used to love those stupid snack cakes.
I think
cakes.
Those are gross.
Yeah, so do I.
Yeah. Now I think they're gross, but back then,
like
you know, I would
gross.
Love... Yeah, yeah. I used to love that stuff. I used to love sugary cereal. Can't have that anymore. Don't eat that anymore. There's a lot of things that I just don't eat anymore because, you know, you do lose your taste for these things as well.
What have you added to your diet that you didn't eat before? Like, all right... More veg and fruit, different types
protein,
of fruit.
Protein shakes.
Protein shakes.
Yes, because, you know, they want you to get a minimum of like 60 grams of protein per day, which is very difficult if you can't eat, you know, because protein is really hard to swallow and break down and stuff like that. So, you know, I always had a protein shake, which is like 30 grams of protein per serving. And I continue to, I like them. So I have protein shakes all the time.
So do you want to take home some protein shakes? Because I've got like three or four different K-Chava.
K-Chava?
That's bring pea-based one over. Protein. We'll stop at my house and you should take them with you.
It's okay. We don't have to stop.
All right. Are you two done?
Okay. Yeah, no. I've been trying to figure out what I'm going to do with the protein shakes. So that's
good. Give them to your dog. Your dog eats everything.
Why? Yes. You don't like them? Is that what it is? Or
I've always tried to do protein shakes. I just can't get into them.
L likes protein
shakes.
I
tried really hard.
Yeah, L will probably. Are they chocolate? Vanilla?
Summer chocolate.
Okay, yeah,
she'll summer like fruit.
What brand is it?
Green tea.
K-Chava.
K-A-C-H-A-V-A.
No. I like pure. There's a pure protein or something like that.
This is our sponsor for
K-Chava. Is our sponsor.
Yeah, my favorite is Fairlife. Fairlife have really good protein shakes.
Really?
Yes. Yes.
Huh.
It's like chocolate.
The milk company.
Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, those are really good. You can get them at Costco.
That's
so it probably helps you keeping the weight off. That your wife is very into fitness, right? And she's very into clean eating, and she's a vegetarian, right?
Is she a vegetarian?
Yes.
Yes. So, listen.
We want to meet you, Hamina.
If I was living or married to someone who ate barbecue all the time, it would be hard to keep it off, right, and rock steady. But it's not that hard because, I mean, it's hard, but it's probably easier than most because you have someone in your life who is dedicated to, you know, being fit.
Yeah, if she was a bad eater, you know, it would have been harder. But she is, you know, she didn't grow up in this country and, you know, she just eats differently.
Okay. Scotty, what advice?
She doesn't eat fast food or anything like that, really.
Fast food's lousy, man. That shit is just so bad.
But I grew up on it.
You worked at McDonald's for like 25 years.
No, I didn't work at McDonald's for
25 years.
Years.
In high school.
In high school, yes. Yeah. But I ate a lot of McDonald's.
Wow.
As a kid. I ate it almost every day for years.
Is that because your mom didn't cook?
Yeah, like, I was kind of an independent, you know, I was kind of, you know, while in high school I worked. I didn't spend a lot of time home.
You had your first job when you were like 7, right? Literally, when he was 7, he was like tying up newspapers for like the, you know, he was like.
No, I wasn't tying up newspapers.
I was sitting on stuffing tables, stuffing handbags at my mom and dad's warehouse.
That's child labor laws.
It is child labor. In Canada.
Oh, sorry.
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 Did you get paid?
Only when I was old enough to
room and board and meals.
Yes, yes. So, okay. So I know that there's more to the story because there's like a deeper philosophical layer of things, Scott, because you and I had conversations about the message you wanted to communicate about free will and all of that stuff. Like, are we getting into that today? Or are you,
know,
you like in a...
When was this conversation had? And where was I?
I think you were taking your daughter to somewhere and we had a conversation about like the deeper meaning of what Scott hopes for in this podcast, you know?
Okay, go for it.
you know, what I will say, and we'll see if anything comes of it, is that the surgery is basically removing yourself from the equation. There's no, you have no choice in the matter but to lose weight. I guess, you know, you could probably sit there and drink milkshakes all day. You'd probably get sick.
I love milkshakes.
Yeah, but literally, you know, you're removing your own behavior from the equation. It's like a plumbing fix. You know, it's so weird. It's I said it's the easiest diet you'll ever be on, but it's not really a diet because it's really just a mechanical fix to what's
because you can't physically eat certain things anymore, yeah. Or you can't eat to excess anymore.
You could wire your jaw shut, and maybe you know that would have the same effect. I guess people lose weight when that happens to them. But you know what I was thinking about this morning is that, it wasn't by choice. It's never anybody's choice to become obese. It just happens. And it happens, you know, in spite of all the, you know, the people out there selling, dieting and exercise and all that. It doesn't really matter what you do. If you put on a certain amount of weight, you're almost... It's you're almost destined to stay that way unless you have, you know, some drastic, thing done like I did.
I got to tell you, I think for me, I'm too friggin' vain, right? Like,
I don't think you're genetically inclined to be fat.
Dude, you see my father? You've never met my father. My dad has a big beer belly. Dude, huge beer belly. Right? Like huge. Just his belly was huge. So we've talked about this. I've lived my life like not to be like that. I'm too vain to let myself go. I just am. Right. So whether that is my cure, vanity. Right. I don't know. That's how I would be like. OK, so when I see. So we make this joke, Christina. When I go to Christina's house and we're driving around, there's this guy who sits on his porch, right?
Yes.
And he sits in his chair, and I look at Christine. This guy is huge. I look at her and I go, I feel sorry for the chair. Like the chair is just.
It is. It is.
This guy is tremendous, and he sits outside on his porch in like a rocking chair. You can barely see the rocking chair, and I feel sorry for the chair. That's the joke because there's so much stress. So when I see people who are so obese, I honestly, I feel bad. I'm like, because you're not going to live to your full life expectancy. You're probably in a lot of pain. You probably have all these comorbidities. And food and drink is probably the one thing that makes you feel better, right? And it's also killing you. So, like, I was at this bar restaurant at Worcester Ice Rink, and I saw this guy. And he's sitting there with his friends, and he was a very, very large man. And he's sitting there eating, yucking it up. But, like, I have to think that the quiet times, you're upset and you're depressed. And, like, you look at yourself in the mirror and you're like, why didn't I stop this earlier? And you feel like you're on a roller coaster and you can't stop yourself. So I applaud Scott and others like him who get ahead of it, like, when they can.
Well, I think, you know, listen, for me, yes, it was definitely a depressing experience because I was once thin. But for people that, you know, that are heavy their whole lives, they probably don't think that way. You know, they don't think as much.
But even for people who are quote unquote heavy their whole lives, there was a time when even the heaviest of people was probably thin. Even if it was for a very short period of time. Like, I've struggled with my weight my whole entire life. And I would say I was heaviest between the ages of, like, 7 and, like, 14. Mm-hmm. And then I went on a crazy, like, I literally for a year ate a slice of bread and processed cheese and a grapefruit for 3 meals a day and a Diet Coke. Like, that's what I would take to school. And I lost, like, 70 pounds that year. And I was able to keep it off throughout sort of college And then it's been a yo-yo. Like every year I do a cleanse just around January and I'm probably able to take off 20 pounds that I somehow during the course of the year gain at least half back. Right? Like that's just a, and that's a yo-yo. But like my hope is that things sort of stabilize a little bit more as I get older.
You know, I see kids with their parents. I see a kid who's overweight and I look at his parents who are also overweight. And my immediate thought is a kid's got no shot because what is happening inside the house is they're probably serving the kid and themselves
crap food.
And the kid is in an environment. Is that a form of child abuse? Right.
Well, now, I mean, I would say no, but I also think the other piece of it for our contemporary life is there are so many kids, my own kids included and my own life included. We spend so much more time, quote unquote, eating out. Mm-hmm. There's no control over what we get mm-hmm. in the food, regardless of our being careful when we eat out.
Yeah, eating out is
it's
definitely
the greatest
it's a killer.
Harm. Yes.
Yes. You eat so much more when you eat out. You know, the poor, because you feel like I paid for it. I bet, you know, it doesn't. I wish.
And there's also so much more butter and oil.
We're getting cheesesteaks tonight, right? We're getting cheesesteaks tonight?
Yes. Yes, we are.
Fantastic.
And French fries.
And poutine.
Yes, poutine.
So,
but this, you know, like I looked it up this morning. 40% of Americans are considered obese.
I believe 40%
of Americans.
What percent is overweight? Probably 60% is overweight.
No, it was like 80.
Yeah, okay.
It was 80% overweight and half of them are at least obese. So they have BMI 30 or higher.
When I came back from Europe for a year, when I lived in Dublin, mm-hmm. first thing I noticed, two things, how big Americans were and how much food was served in a plate of when you go out to eat. Like the plates of food are huge, right? And we eat it all because, as we just said, we're paying for it, right?
Right.
Well, and there are like restaurants out there where they're like, oh, yeah, let's see if you can eat all this.
Yeah, and there's all you can eat restaurants.
Yeah,
you know, there's
crazy.
Yeah, all you can eat sushi.
All right, so Scott and I.
But this is what I was kind of alluding to in our discussion about
that
free will.
Fucked.
Is that you know most people you know it's they're products of their own environment, they're products of their upbringing, they're products of their hereditary you know their genes and
yes.
stuff like that. You don't really decide to do it.
But you can make a change. You can change that direction, dude. You really can. You can.
Of course you can. But
it takes so much more work and it takes so much more of a concerted effort. And like a lot of people would say to me when I was like in my early like 30s and saying like, man, it's so hard. Like I'm struggling with my weight. And part of it was like, hey, you were anatomically made for an Asian diet. Do you think it's the American diet on your
mm-hmm.
on your like
right
body?
Yes.
And
yes.
I would say yes. And
yes.
honestly, part of me feels so much better when I have rice and a bowl of vegetables and a lean protein.
So we talk about blue zones, right? Is that
yeah.
yeah. So we talk about blue zones. We talked about it earlier. It's a product of accessibility to natural
healthy
food, where you live, right? And what your activity is. Like these decagenarians who are still doing their own gardening with literally manual tools, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Absolutely.
Right. So, yeah. I mean, I don't think I would have lost all that weight on my own. I definitely do not think that would have happened. So, you know, for me, it's like I didn't willfully put it on, and I didn't even, you know, if I didn't ask that question to that surgeon, and if I didn't have this gallbladder issue and that day, he could have just said, no, your fat belly is not a problem to me, and ended it there.
Yeah.
But he said,
yeah.
no, but, you know.
It's going to be a problem potentially
well,
to you.
He was, you know, somebody that did this kind of surgery, did it many times, and he was kind of selling it. And
okay.
I bought it. Yeah.
Okay.
So I'm gonna bring up another sort of like phenomenon,
mm-hmm.
right? We are in the age of Ozempic and all of these weight loss drugs,
right.
And I am just embarking on it myself, right? How do you feel as somebody who has gone through bariatric surgery, who understands that that sometimes there is no free will around all of this. And how do you feel about this surge towards Americans and these injections and new drugs that are coming up that help you either suppress your appetite or,
I think they're, it's great. go for it. But at the same time, you have to, people doing that, you have to understand that there is a lifestyle change that you need to
absolutely
embark on as well. Just don't. Ozempic is basically an appetite suppressant.
Yes.
And it works really, really well, apparently. Once you come off it, though, you still need to pick up some good habits while you're doing this. I used to order off the kids' menu.
but don't you think it's sort of like muscle memory? If you are in a space where able to train yourself to, like, then doesn't your sort of stomach shrink a little bit in terms
sure.
of like what it's used to?
It does. It's not quite the metabolic reset that surgery is, because
yes.
literally, there's like a break in the connection between my stomach and my brain. Mm. It's been traumatized so severely that they don't communicate the same way anymore.
Yes.
So you're not going to have that. You're not going to have, the fact that, food enters, your intestine farther down the track, so you don't absorb as much calories and stuff
like that. Right, right, right.
So, I think it's great because the surgery is, it can be, the first 2 weeks are pretty difficult post surgery.
From a pain or from an, like?
Just the everything.
The adjustment.
Yeah.
It's very traumatic
I
on
used
many
to,
levels,
you know,
right?
We would I would go on to like an online group forum for people and I would tell people it's the what the fuck did I do to myself phase the first
really?
2 weeks
really
because
wow.
you're just like, oh my god, it's really, it's not so much painful, it's just
are you hungry?
Not really. No, you're not hungry. That's the thing. That's what's amazing is like you never eat and you're not even hungry. And, I used to pack lunch. It would be like these little 2 ounce ramekins of like, mm-hmm. tuna salad or something mm-hmm. like that.
And you would just eat the little
thing.
And that would be satiating.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah. 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 The, you have more of a problem getting enough calories and getting enough water in you and getting enough protein, because you will eat your own muscle as well. You're anybody who loses a lot of weight is also going to lose muscle at the same time.
Your body needs to survive.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So knowing what you know now and looking back on how far you've come, any regrets? Would you do it again?
Oh.
Understanding the technology that is out there now, would you have chosen a drug instead? Like
maybe. Maybe. I think, Ozempic, it's off label, isn't it? Is it approved officially
for
weight loss?
It's for it was originally for diabetes.
Right.
Yes.
And they found that it also suppressed your appetite.
Right. Well, that's the one thing, surgery, I my blood sugar dropped within like 3 or 4 days to a normal level. I was pre-diabetic. Yes.
Wow.
Blood pressure normalizes. All this stuff happens so quickly. Yeah. Like you're almost...
Congrats.
Before you get out of the hospital, you're a healthier person.
Yeah. Yeah.
Even though, you just went through this really
stressful surgery.
Yeah. Yeah. So would I do it again? If I had to, I guess so.
Okay.
Would I suggest it for, talk to your doctor? I think it was great for me. When I see obese people, I see people who just haven't had surgery yet in a way. That's what I see.
I wonder, it's funny, like, there's different personalities, right? There's some people, like, I'm thinking about this guy I saw in this restaurant who maybe you don't have access to great health care, right? And you can't, and you have no willpower, and you can't get the surgery, and you don't have, dude, Ozempic, I heard, by the way, it's sold for like $1,000, but it's cost less than $5 to make, and the pharmaceutical company's under great pressure to like, why are you trying? Because we can,
right?
Because we're here to make money, right?
Yeah. There's also the R&D cost of it all.
Yeah. But listen, I think there's different types of personalities out there that though those who accept their fate, right, and these are the cards I'm dealt. All right, I'm going to deal with it. And then those who are just like, F that, I don't feel great, and I got all these comorbidities, and
I'm gonna do something to change that.
Correct.
Yeah.
And that's where you're different, right? And that's where you're different, right? Where you're like, I'm gonna make these changes. That's where the three of us are different, right? So I don't know. It's just like, it's interesting, you know? Like, why wouldn't a human being change themselves for the better if they could?
Well,
A lot of people don't know that they can, though.
Yeah, but I mean, if you think about it,
Google it, you know?
I mean, I'd rather be, you know, some people are just like, I'm not getting my freaking stomach cut out. It's, you know, like, are you crazy?
Drastic.
All right, then you're going to die 25 years before you're supposed to, right?
Possibly. But you don't think, no one thinks that way.
But I mean, I also think a lot of people don't think that this kind of a surgery is going to be accessible to them or covered.
That's true.
Right?
That's true. Yes.
And
I didn't know that.
Like, you didn't know that.
No, I
and
did
I think
know that.
I've known a couple of people who didn't know that either until they were like, oh my God, this is available to me? My insurance is going to cover this?
Yeah.
Like, I have, like, because people are like, that's too expensive. There's no way.
I heard somewhere or I read somewhere that, you know, the person that goes through with the surgery, they spend an average of like 4 years contemplating it before it's actually done. I spent like 5 minutes.
Sure.
You know, I did not have that at all. But, again, I used to play this really horrible game with myself. Am I the fattest person in the room? Am I the fattest person on the subway?
Oh, my God, I've been there. I would say to Cece, I'd be like, Cece's my daughter. I'd be like, do I look as fat as she does?
Like, there would be times where
I'd be like, okay, wait, do I look that fat?
I say, you know what I do? I'm like, is my hair as nice as that guy's? Do my arms look as big as that dude? All right. That's the vanity kicking in.
Well, Scott, thank you for sharing your story.
Wait, are we going to sing a song? Are we going to sing
something? Can we not?
I think you're good, man.
I want to mess up some lyrics.
Go ahead. What do you got? What do you got for us?
I don't know. No,
do
together.
Some Nirvana. It's, Kurt Cobain's anniversary was yesterday.
Oh,
2 days ago.
Come as you are.
No, I'm going to mess that up.
That's the whole purpose of this.
Exactly. All right. So
next time I have a life-changing, hopefully I'll have some good 0 hours in my future instead of, I don't really have anything else.
No, these are good. These are really informative, good, necessary conversations. What are you talking about?
Yeah, there is
value here.
Let's go get some devil dogs. Come on.
Yeah, ring dings.
Let's go get some ring dings and some devil
dogs.
And
some apple jacks.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right. This was
The Zero
Hour.
We are
Christine Chapman, your host, and
Mark Fitz, your co-host. And this is Scotty Moosh.
Doing the Fandango.
Scott Lechtrecker, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks, guys.
Our pleasure. Peace.